Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is historical romance author Lenora Bell. I discovered Lenora's writing this year, and I basically devoured it. It was so good. Today's is the publication day for Love is a Rogue, which is a gender flip of Beauty and the Beast retelling. In this episode, superfan Katie joins us in the interview, and we chat about Lenora's writing process, her books, and some book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast. Welcome, Lenora. Hi.
Hi, Lenora. Thanks so much for hosting me. It's wonderful to be here on your awesome podcast.
So happy to have you here. And today's guest co-host is Katie. And so, hi, Katie.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So excited. So Katie's joining me because she's a super fan for Lenora. And so we're going to talk about Lenora's books and all the fun things. Oh my gosh, she actually has a sweatshirt. That's all about Lenora.
Lenora's Bookish Belle sweatshirt. Oh, she looks adorable.
This is so awesome. So let's get started. So Lenora, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a historical romance novelist with Avon Books, and I write in the Regency era. I've lived on 5 continents, and I'm currently living in New Zealand, near Wellington, New Zealand, on the North Island of New Zealand. And I guess my books are known for their humor and pop culture references, like little Easter eggs I hide in my books for readers like Katie to find.
Yes. And I love the Easter eggs. I love trying to figure out what it is that you're hiding in there and sprinkling in. Thankfully, you tell us most of the time in case we miss it.
And sometimes we pick up on Easter eggs that I didn't even know I was planting. It was kind of subconscious, you know?
That's what we're here for, right?
Yeah.
So what is your very first memory of what romance had reeled you into the genre, into writing it for us?
Well, I grew up in sort of a household where genre fiction was sort of frowned upon. It was kind of, we weren't allowed to get, you know, the quote unquote bodice rippers out of the library. So I grew up on a steady diet of Jane Austen, Dickens, the Bronte sisters, all these literary, which, you know what, those are historical romances. Pride and Prejudice, that's what really started it all for me. There's just something about that loathe at first sight trope. I absolutely love it. It's my catnip. They hate each other and then they love each other. And it's just, I can't get enough of it. I always want that. But, you know, of course, I discovered historical romances on my own. My parents didn't need to know about it. And just a side note, my parents are now fans. They read my book. So, you know, they've mellowed out. But anyway, so as we do, we find what we want. And I found lots of old school historical romance authors, but I think that one that comes to mind is Teresa Medeiros. And she wrote a series of fairy tale romances, and they were kind of, they were like twisted fairy tales. And one of them was A Kiss to Remember, and it was Beauty and the Beast, but it was gender flipped Beauty and the Beast. And it had the amnesia trope, all right? So this is a huge, yeah. And also the, you know, got to find a husband or I'm going to lose my house trope.
Ooh, oh my God, this is gold.
Right? So the hero gets awakened by the kiss of the heroine. He's in the woods. He has amnesia. And I just, for some reason, that book just grabbed me. It was the trope. It was trope-tastic. It was fairy tales, flipped fairy tales. And I feel like, you know, it's one of those books that sort of has a lot to do with what I'm writing right now.
It sounded familiar, you know, some of the things that you're packing in, you know,
yep,
just said, like, oh yeah, all right.
Yeah.
I love this. So what inspired you to become a writer?
Well, I think most writers, all writers are first and foremost readers. So I have been just a lifelong bookworm. I'm always the one you would find in the corner reading, or walking and reading, as Tessa Dare likes to dedicate her books to the girls who walk and read books at the same time as me. I've just always been a reader. So as a voracious lifelong bookworm, I'm writing to create the same experience for readers that so many talented authors have given me. I want to create this beautiful, sort of transporting, passionate, fun adventure for readers. And that's really what inspired me to write.
I love that. I love that. So then in turn, what was your journey to get your first book published?
Well, I was in a graduate writing program, but it was for nonfiction writing. So I was getting my MFA in nonfiction writing from Portland State University, but I was always scribbling romance on the side and wanting to turn it in. And my professors, you know, I actually did encounter a few professors who allowed me to turn in a historical romance, a few chapters in some of my fiction writing classes, but my degree was in nonfiction. But obviously my heart was with fiction.
Yes.
Yeah. So in 2006, I entered the Avon Fanlit contest, which was an online writing contest. And you had people like Eloisa James and Julia Quinn and reading chapters that readers or aspiring authors would submit. So in 2006, I met Tessa Dare, I met Courtney Milan, Erica Ridley, Darcy Burks, Kat Sebastian. We all met online during the Avon Fanlit. It was so much fun. And I was kind of writing kind of really weird, erotic, gothic Edgar Allan Poe retellings. And it wasn't really, you know, like I really loved them and I was really into it, but I think it wasn't until I really found my funny, I found my humor in my books that I really found my voice. So I entered the Golden Heart contest with the Romance Writers of America, and I met another group of amazing authors, and we're all still friends today. And that sort of led me down the path. My Golden Heart manuscript was Charlene and the Duchess Factory. So this was a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory inspired romance that became my first book, my first published book, How the Duke Was Won.
Oh yeah. I love that book, by the way. That book was like, it was just like perfection for me of like just the bachelor style, you know,
like gauntlet. Oh man, I love Charlene because I just like how we find out at the very beginning that she can throw down, like literally throw down.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Laura, you picked up on it. I pitched that book as Charlie and the Chocolate Factory meets The Bachelor.
Yes.
So good. It's so good.
It's so good. Like, you're like, as someone who binged on The Bachelor and loves this kind of like just gauntlet and just looking at that in the historical setting, I was like, just count me in. Like, this book is
Yeah. Sign me up.
Yeah. You know, I'm always talking to other writers who are just starting their journey, writing journey. And it's really important to be able to distill your book into that elevator pitch, that one sentence, mm-hmm. you know? And so I feel like maybe on my journey, when I was writing these other types of genres, I wasn't really, when someone would ask me what my book was about, it would be like three paragraphs long. Think about blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, okay. So when you're actually able to distill your idea down into something that's kind of bite-sized and kind of has a lot of mass market or appeal, that's when you can really start getting serious.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
So I got a question. So you write historical romance, you write Regency side. What was your research process like to write those books?
Well, it's very research intensive to write historical romance, as I'm sure you can imagine. You just don't know how did they get up into the carriage and what did the carriage look like inside and what did it smell like and was it bumpy and what were the, I mean, there's just, you can just go down so many research rabbit holes. I use a software called Scrivener. Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure other authors have mentioned to you in your podcast. Scrivener is a software that's created specifically for writers. And it's a place where you can keep everything together, your research, your manuscript, your character studies. Everything's just in one document. It's really easy to find. So my research process involves opening a lot of documents within Scrivener so that I can easily reference them. Mm-hmm. Like right now I'm researching winemaking in England, and you're like, England's not known for its wines. However, I have found an estate in 1780s in Surrey near London that was producing champagne and Burgundy wines. So I'm having a lot of fun. You know, I think I'm going to have to visit a winery soon and do some practical research.
And I think there's some wineries where you are, you know.
Yes. New Zealand has an amazing wine culture, and it's a growing wine culture. Their Pinot Noirs are fantastic. And I do have to say, yes, I am drinking a lot of wine while researching this.
All right. Sign me up. That sounds like fun.
Take you over.
That would be way more fun than sitting here in Colorado. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, honey.
That is what it is. So in that, since you're keeping track of everything, like as you're going, do you, I guess when you're going into your next story or even when you're starting your new series, like you have with Love is a Rogue, are you kind of, do you outline the rest of them too? Or do you just kind of see where it's going to take you as you're going?
I know there are some writers who are very organized in that way. And I know Sarah McLean, when she pitches a series, she knows where it's going. Yeah. And it's like going to have four books, and this is the big secret that's going to be revealed. I'm more of a seat of your pants type of writer. And for me, I try to plot. I really try hard. And I can plot it out, but it's always going to change. And often it will go in the exact opposite direction of where I think it's going to go. And that's actually when you can find like the in the most interesting, juiciest parts of a scene, or when it goes in the absolutely unexpected direction, when you're sort of in the creative process. So for me, I try to strike a balance between just showing up every day for your writing and writing with your whole heart, but then also being open to creativity and open to inspiration.
For sure. I like that.
So how do you develop your characters? Do you meet them at first sight, or do they come to you and they surprise you as you write the stories down? What's that process like?
Yeah, so Laura, characters are funny things. They are just like meeting a person in a bar, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you and I went to a bar together. And we're doing the getting to know you conversation. What do we choose to tell people about ourselves? And what stories do they tell us so that we know on a superficial level? So there's first the superficial things, like what do they look like? You know, what stories do they choose to tell in an initial meeting? And then you have to go down and dig down to that deeper layer. And I like to use a book called Story Genius by Lisa Crum. And she has developed a character questionnaire. And there's so many questions that you ask about each character. So for example, you say, what's the heroine like in the beginning of the book? And then you ask, what does she want? And then you ask, what is her greatest fear? Then you ask things like, what is a misbelief that the heroine has about herself? And how did that misbelief grow from her childhood? So it's an in-depth questionnaire. It takes pages and pages to write, and maybe only a third of that information, or maybe even less than that, will make it into the book. But the reader will be able to tell that you did all that research. They'll feel like they're in good hands because they can tell that you know more about that character than you're putting on the page. Mm-hmm. And for me, like where I stumble when I'm beginning to write books is when I don't know my characters well enough. So I have to spend a good month really getting to know those people and psychoanalyzing them in a way.
I love this. Yeah, I'm always fascinated when the character development process looks like, you know, because the author knows more than it leads on. And so the author knows the backstory, the people, the characters, the arcs, the different things are happening. So it's always fascinating that whole get to know each other process, you know.
For sure.
So let's talk about Love is a Rogue. What was the source of inspiration?
Well, Love is a Rogue is the first in my new Wallflowers versus Rogues series with Avon Romance. Now, we set this up to be versus because we're looking at stories where it's loathe at first sight in a way, you know, that it's the enemies to lovers trope. And Love is a Rogue, all of my first six historical romances, they all feature wealthy dukes. Duke. And I thought, you know what, let's change things up. My editor and I talked about it. She said, you know, do they all have to be dukes? And I said, you know, no, you know, I have a book inside me that I really want to write. And that book is about a carpenter. And this is a working class hero. And he is not a secret heir to a dukedom. No, he is a carpenter. And she said, okay, and if that's what you really want to write, then write it. And so the idea for Love is a Rogue, the series is going to be gender-flipped fairy tales. And the first one is Beauty and the Beast. And so we have sort of, it's not like absolutely gender-flipped. It's kind of like they're both beauty and they're both the beast. And there's some Gaston thrown in to the hero as well. So the idea was that he is a carpenter on the Duke, her brother's estate. So we have Ford, the working class carpenter who has a lot of Han Solo in him as well. I don't know if you picked up on that. That his name.
Oh yeah. I love you. I know. Yes, sir.
And then we have bookish lady Beatrice Bentley, who is the sister of a Duke, and she is sort of the reclusive. Beast living in her library tower, just reading books and sort of living her life in books instead of in real life.
I love it. And I, you know, as somebody who got to read it beforehand, like it made me so happy to read that story because I know that there are tons of Beauty and the Beast retellings and things like that, but to see both sides of the main characters be in your characters was refreshing to me, at least, you know, because there was, you could see both the Beauty and the Beast in both of them throughout the whole book. And that was, I don't want to say obvious or apparent to me, but it was there. So, and I kind of asked, you know, wanted to make sure this was okay, but I wanted to ask you if this was kind of a love letter to your husband, because I know just a tiny bit that, you know, he is a carpenter.
Yes, he is. And actually, it's one of those like made-for-TV romance love stories where I met him at a party with mutual friends, and then I hired him to help me fix up this old, quirky old 1886 farmhouse in Portland, Oregon. So I was working with him because, you know, sweat equity, you know, I was working. And so we were working together and we got to know each other by discussing our favorite books, our favorite music, while we were ripping up floorboards and sanding walls. And he gave me a nail gun and taught me how to shingle a roof back on. And he gave me a tool belt as a present. Yes. You know, and I made him read Pride and Prejudice, which he did.
Well, good for you.
He said he preferred Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, but that's his prerogative.
Fair enough.
And so, you know what? It's like, you know, when romance novelists were at a party and people say, and what do? And you say, oh, I'm a historical romance novelist. And then, you know, they'll say, oh, does your husband or your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend help you with your research? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And you're like, ugh, God, that question again.
Here we go.
Actually, in this case, art is imitating life, because I really did put a lot of my own life and my own experience, and I even put some of my husband's voice in the story, and he just read the book and he really loved it, and I caught him chuckling a few times, which is my goal.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad.
So I have a question. This is like, how do you use humor? Because you want to infuse that humor in that, you know, historical setting, you know, it's kind of like a unique thing. So how do you do that, you know?
Well, humor is one of those funny things. It's really like when I was picking my MFA classes, you can't really teach people how to be funny. I mean, there are mm-hmm. classes on using humor and screenwriting and things like that, and there are certain things, certain tools you can use to set up humorous situations. But what I find is I'll write a first draft of a scene and it's not funny. Okay. It's mm-hmm. just, it's just the character is talking, they're doing this, they're doing that. And then I kind of just have to go, it's kind of like getting to know your characters as well. You kind of dig down and you find the humor. Like, what is unique about this character? Like, what funny words would they use, or what quirky, interesting thought would they have, or, you know, that type of a situation. In my first book, How the Duke Was Won, I had a character who was a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, yeah, she's quirky, she's interesting. Alice Toombs, she ended up being the heroine. And yeah, Alice, she ended up being the heroine of my third book. And I thought, you know, she's really an interesting person. So then I did some historical research and I found that the word that Percy Bysshe Shelley had written a article about vegetarianism, and he called it frugivorousness. And I thought, now that is a really funny word, frugivorousness, and it just sounds funny. So then I just went off on that, and I had her, because she was trying to repel the Duke. She didn't really want to win the Duke. She was trying to repel him. So she's going on and on about her frugivorousness and how we shouldn't eat meat and all this stuff. And some readers thought it was really funny, and I was cracking myself up when I wrote it. So that's kind of how you know. Well, sometimes we think we're funny and we're not, but if you're, yes. It's a good sign if you're cracking yourself up while you're writing. Yes.
Exactly. And I love that. And the same, that's how I felt about Beatrice in this book and all of her words, all of her fancy words. And I'm just like, I hope I know what she's trying to say here before having to look it up or something.
Oh, I had to look it
up.
I had to look it up.
So... Who has been one of your most difficult characters to write so far?
So my second book, which was loosely inspired by The Wizard of Oz, it was called If I Only Had a Duke. Mm-hmm. And
I love that book.
And second books are notoriously hard to write, first of all, as I'm sure several authors have told you, Laura. Second mm-hmm. books are difficult. They're really hard because you've had your whole life to write that first book, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're on a deadline for the second book and you're like, ah, it's gotta be really good. and then you put too difficult of expectations on yourself. So my second character, I had envisioned a different heroine for that book, but my editor said, let's make it be the look-alike half-sister. And I said, oh, okay. But then I didn't know her. I didn't know Dorothea. I didn't know her very well. So I had to write the book several times. I had to rewrite. And one of the things that it didn't start gelling until I realized that, why is she a wallflower? It's because she had a stage mother.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like her mom was kind of like a pageant mom. Yeah. She was almost pushing her into the limelight when she didn't want to be there. And when I got to know the mother and the mother's expectations on the daughter, then I really got to know the daughter. So she was difficult for me to write, but it was only because I just didn't know her well enough yet, and I didn't know why or the circumstances that had created this desire to leave London and to get out of the spotlight.
To follow the yellow brick road.
And you know what? That's one of those Easter eggs that a reader picked up on. I had made the carriage wheels yellow.
I missed that, but I know.
Come on, that. I was not trying to do the yellow brick road, and then Rita was like, and the carriage wheels were yellow, and she was going to the Emerald Isle. And I was like, yep, she was going to Ireland, the Emerald Isle, but I have no idea why I made the carriage wheels yellow, but yep, that was the yellow brick road.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're going with it. We're rolling with it.
Your subconscious was just put into the Easter egg.
Yes.
You know what? That's the magic. That's when the magic happens.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so past the books, what are some of your favorite things to do when you're not writing, especially since you live in New Zealand? So,
well, reading, of course. I'm always reading, and also drinking wine, of course. And in New Zealand, they have done a pretty good job of locking down the borders. It's a small island nation. That was easier to do. And we are actually able, we're in what's called alert level 2 right now, which means that we can go out, we can just have gatherings that are up to 100 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like the other night, we had our friends over, and we actually love to do karaoke. It's not a very pandemic-friendly activity because you're passing around a microphone. But, we had the wet wipes and everything, but, New Zealand is in a fairly good place in terms of COVID. So we were able to have a little karaoke party just with a few friends, and I'm a singer. So I love singing with other people. I like the energy that brings, and my husband's a musician. So we had a lot of fun doing that. I wish I could invite you guys over for a karaoke party. I don't know. Do you guys do karaoke?
I love karaoke. I have to have many drinks first. Oh. I don't know if it helps with how I sound, but I think it does.
Oh, I'm your biggest cheerleader. I love to help people do karaoke. I'm an enabler.
I'll take it.
Laura, how about you?
So I've been to a few karaoke bars in New York when I lived there. So it was just kind of like fun because I have like your own separate room and you just go with your friends and you just karaoke, to some really cheesy songs, or you just belt it out and it's just so good.
Oh, yes. It's such a release. I love it so much. I just wonder when will we be able to do that again? I think we're Zoom karaokeing for a while now.
Most likely.
In America. At least in America, we'll be doing this for a while. So.
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. So let's talk about your new series. What can we expect from the next couple books or the series?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're all going to be sort of gender flip fairy tales. So the one I'm working on right now, this is a tentative working title, so might change, but I'm hoping that it's going to be Seduction is a Scoundrel.
Oh my God, count me in. I'll buy the book.
Definitely.
So this is a gender flipped Cinderella story. And when I'm in the initial phases of writing a book, I'm just sort of, what's the universe going to throw my way? What inspiration is going to come to me? And I try to be open to it. And there was a movie that came out recently, and it was the personal history of David Copperfield. Mm-hmm. Highly recommended. And I thought, you know what? Dickens, David Copperfield is a gender flip Cinderella story, right? He has a wicked stepfather. It's a rags to riches story. And he has a wicked stepfather who throws him out and he has to go work at the factory. And I was like, that's interesting. And I love that movie. And Dev Patel, the actor, was phenomenal. Loved it. My husband almost fell asleep, but he had worked that day. But I loved the movie. And so I thought, Okay, so this is, I gave a lot of David Copperfield's backstory to my hero. So you can look for those Dickens Easter eggs in there. And then it's a upper class heroine who is the daughter of an earl, and she is running or managing a vineyard on her father's estate.
Ooh. Okay.
I think this is kind of like a Cinderella story with wine.
Yeah.
How about that?
I love winemaking books. I really do have a thing for those books. I'm just fascinated about winemaking process, and I'm like, if you have a book about it and just talk about the process and managing all the different things, it's just like amazing. So
well, Laura, you're gonna have to send me your list of wine romances to read.
I will.
Yeah, so my first book was kind of like chocolate. I had a lot of chocolate in there, drinking chocolate. So this one's gonna have a lot of wine in there. A lot of the process and a lot of, so it's a working class hero. He's kind of a grifter, and she is running the vineyard. And then it's, tropes. I love tropes. A forced marriage.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Count me in. Oh my God.
Love
he
it.
Unexpectedly inherits the earldom and they have to get married. Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Yay!
This sounds so good. And we have to wait.
Yeah, I know. Gee dang it.
It's okay. So, awesome. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. It's an opportunity to share with the audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Well, of course I have to say historical romance because it is, I don't read a ton of contemporary. I know, but when my favorite historical romance authors go into contemporary, I will read that. I'm all about that. I know Sarah McLean has a contemporary novella coming out in just a few days, right?
Yes, she does.
So I am so there for that. And I love Julianne Long did a 3-book contemporary series that I absolutely love, The Wildcat Canyon or whatever, Hellcat Canyon. But anyway, historical romance is my favorite genre. I'm also a fan of fantasy and sci-fi as well. And I love historical women's fiction. I'm just a voracious reader. I read nonfiction. I read a lot, but historical romance, yep.
Yay. Mm-hmm. My favorite too. Let's see. Okay. So what are your top 3 desert island books? So if you're going to be stranded, what are the 3 that you're bringing? You're going to have everything else you need, but you need 3 books.
Hey, Katie, did you pick up on In Love as a Rogue? Did you pick up on the desert island conversation?
Sure did. That's partially why I wanted to ask that question.
You know, I thought to myself, you know, I've really had that conversation with a lot of people about you know what that's about? That's about your priorities in life. Like what's important to you in your life? Like if today was your last day on earth, what are you going to do? And if you were on a desert island, what would you take with you? These are things that you think about what's the most important thing to you in your life. And for me, if I'm going to be on a desert island and I can only read 3 books for the rest of my life,
right?
I mean, I have to say Pride and Prejudice, just because I reread that book every year. Mm-hmm. I reread it every year without fail. I always find something new. I love the delightful humor. I love Darcy. I love Lizzie. I love how bookish she is. And then that scene, the groveling scene where he, you know, in the book, he doesn't come out of a lake in a wet white shirt, but
right.
we all know he really does do that. So in my mind, I'm picturing it, right? So
it makes anyway. The most sense.
And then, you know, he loves her so ardently. And
ardently.
Just body and soul. I just love that scene so much. And I'll never get tired of that scene. So I'd have to say Pride and Prejudice probably would bring Jane Eyre. It's a complex book. It's got a lot of, you know, problems with it. If you do a modern day read to it, but it's just the language is so beautiful, such beautiful language. And then if I'm going to pick like a historical romance book to bring with me for that desert island, it's going to have to be a Tessa Dare. And it's probably going to be When a Scot Ties the Knot.
That is definitely a good one.
I love that.
I feel like she created that moment where he says, I did not do cuddling, or I can't do a
accent. What are you talking about though?
And he doesn't do cuddling, but you know he needs to be cuddled.
He needs to be cuddled.
And that to me is the essence of a historical romance right there, or any romance really, is the character thinks they need XYZ, but the reader can really see, oh no, what you really need is love.
Mm-hmm. It's more fun that way when we figure it out before they do, because we can just say the whole time, I knew it.
I think that's one of the quintessential historical romance novels ever written. I think she's just brilliant.
Yeah. I agree.
So what has been a book you read this past year that you love?
Oh, I've read so many books that I love this last year, but I have to rave about Vanessa Riley's A Duke, The Lady, and a Baby, which is a multicultural Regency romance, and we absolutely need more of those. Mm-hmm. And it was a slow burn romance, and I just can't wait for the next. I think it's Rogues and Remarkable Women is the series. Vanessa Riley to me is just so, her language is so poetic. Mm-hmm. It's got so much poetry to it. And there's those gothic elements to the story. It's high on the angst dial. And it's a slow burn romance. So we really see the characters getting to know each other before they fall in love, or as they're falling in love. So I loved that book. I also loved, I had the chance recently to read an ARC, advanced copy of Diana Quincy's Her Night with the Duke. Mm-hmm. Which, that also was one of those books where I was just highlighting the heck out of it, because there was so much beautiful, beautiful language. And also, so it was so passionate. And it's an interesting story. It's different. You know, they kind of hook up early. That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
But it was a masterful storytelling, because even though they hook up early, she kept me on the edge of my seat until the last page.
Mm. Excellent. I'm very excited.
And it has a lot of conflict, which that's always something I'm working, and my editor's always working on me with, because I kind of just like to write nice characters, you know, and she's always like, more conflict. So I'm always studying authors who are really good, like Sarah McLean, really, really good at getting that conflict in there early and making it believable and making the happy ever after hard one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's so hard, because sometimes, like I was telling Laura even before, like I can pick and choose where I want to go, because sometimes my heart can't take the angst and the fighting so much and the conflict. Like I need the softer side. I hate saying that it's like light or fluffy or whatever, but when like personally, I know that I want to read a romance, but I don't want to like put myself through the ringer with something super angsty. I can find it. Yeah. I like that. Especially about your books, you know, that's important, at least for me, you know, when I'm looking.
You know what? My books are fun and frothy, and I own that. And one reviewer wrote that my books were like soap bubbles, you know, that kind of just dissolve. And I thought that was a compliment, because mm-hmm. I like to take bubble baths.
Yeah, I like comfort.
Yeah. But I also, you know, what I'm striving for with this fun and frothy story is I'm striving for an emotional heart,
mm-hmm.
a real depth of emotion that you can feel.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's all about striking that balance. And I hear you. I like to read in different subgenres as well. But for myself, what excites me when I sit down to write is, where am I going to find the humor and the pathos in this scene?
Mm.
Completely. And I like to laugh. I don't need to laugh every time, but I like to laugh. And I find that with your books. And I'm thankful for that, because you don't get that with every historical. So, or even contemporary. So, yeah.
That's such a beautiful compliment. It's my goal to make you laugh, Katie.
Mm-hmm. I do. I laugh all the time. So funny, especially Alice.
Oh, yeah, I love Alice.
So quirky.
My girl.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Monroe, tell us where we can find you online.
You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. I'm on Goodreads. I'm all over the place. I am gearing up for a book release, so hopefully you'll see me everywhere.
I love this. Thank you, Lenora, for being on the show. And thank you, Katie, for joining in the interview.
Thank you for having me. This was super fun.
Oh, thank you so much, Laura and Katie. I've just had so much fun talking to you. I wish we could have all been together drinking a glass of wine.
Someday.
Someday.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourneextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.